Support comes from Bellingham's Whatcom Museum with its historic Hall of Birds on May 31st and June 1st, hosting bird taxidermist and museum preservationist Alice Markham for a weekend of events and workshops. Details and tickets at whatcommuseum.org.
Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. This week, the Two Line's grand opening is bringing light rail to the east side. We'll get a look into how Boeing's finances have been affected by constant controversy. And the Kraken are looking to bring hockey to the masses by moving away from cable TV. Ticket editor Chase Burns and Seattle Times food writer Tan Vint are here to break down the week. But first, let's get you caught up. If you want to be one of the first riders on the East Side's new 2 line, be ready for a ribbon cutting tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. at the Bellevue downtown station. The city says they've got festivities planned at each of the line's 8 stops. Hey, you could even win some prizes. But Bellevue says there is limited parking downtown, so keep it real and take transit. If you have unwanted prescription medication in your home, tomorrow is the DEA's National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. It's an important measure in preventing medication misuse and opioid addiction. We'll put a link in the show notes if you want to find a drop-off location in your area. And students at Cornish College of the Arts are hosting a sit-in to raise awareness about the upcoming sale of Cary Hall. Students will be performing improvisational dances and music at Cary Hall Monday between noon and 3. Attendees will have an opportunity to write goodbye letters and share testimonials about the building, which has been in use by Cornish since 1921. That's it for now. Make sure to come back tonight for Evening Headlines with Paige Browning. Well, 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 if it isn't our old friend Friday. Some Seattle Now besties in the house today. Chase Burns is here. He's an editor at The Ticket. Hey, Chase.
Hello, hello, hello. Hope you're enjoying the rain.
I'm loving it. Tan Vin is here, too. He's a food writer at the Seattle Times. How you doing, Tan?
Doing great, Trish. Thanks for having me. Always fun to be here.
So glad you're here. All right, before we dive in, Root Sports is releasing the Kraken, you two, or more accurately, the Kraken are releasing themselves. The Kraken are moving away from our local sports channel and airing more than 70 games for free on King 5 and its Kong sister station here in Seattle, and streaming via Amazon Prime. This is a big move for accessibility of hockey games. All you need now is like a $2 antenna or a $100 Amazon Prime membership. Sports teams in other cities have done this. It's leading to a massive increase in viewership. I wonder if cable just isn't the move anymore.
You know, Trish, it's like if you look at teams like in Vegas and Arizona, they got rid of their cable deals and they're doing better in terms of attendance. And this is... It makes sense, and it just, I was always wondering why this didn't happen sooner. Because look at this. Because it cost last season $73 to go to New Jersey Devils Kraken game. Mm-hmm. That's the cheapest ticket. And I think a week after that, the home game was against the Flyers, and that cheapest ticket was $148.
What?
And it's really expensive to go to a hockey game, and it's really expensive to get cable to watch a hockey game. So if you're trying to grow a fan base, there's no outlet to do it. And this is just a no-brainer.
Making this more accessible to people is actually them playing the long game in some ways, it seems.
Yeah, and I think cable is definitely dead or dying. And I like if you think about Coachella, they stream Coachella on YouTube now. And like last Sunday, I watched like the full Doja Cat performance live on YouTube from Coachella. And I didn't pay anything. Like I don't pay for a YouTube premium. And so like as like a new sports fan, and I'm trying to become a fan of the Kraken, this is a way that I can do it really easily. And I think about the Mariners, who I am a new fan of and was trying to figure out how to watch them on cable for years. And I have not. I'm pretty savvy online and I fail to find a good stream.
If you look at our landscape in sports, everyone loves the Seahawks. Baseball is America's pastime. Sounders have their fan base. No one talks about the Kraken unless you're a diehard hockey fan. It's such a niche market. They need this. They need this. There's no way around it.
Good for King 5, too, because I appreciate what they're doing. You know, I haven't had cable in years.
Yeah, I've never had cable. I don't know what the cable cord in my apartment does.
All right, moving on to the big story of the week. Eastsiders, get your transit passes ready. The 2 line between Microsoft headquarters in Redmond and South Bellevue opens on Saturday. Sound Transit has some tips for new riders on their website. Trains should run every 10 minutes with 8 stations. It's been 15 years since this line was envisioned, so people are pretty excited. Well, some of them are excited. There was a survey of 300 Bellevue voters. 12% said they'd ride that starter line. 58% said never.
You know, it's weird. There's something about Seattle and Bellevue. As soon as you cross that bridge to the east side, it's just so different culturally. Bellevue, to me, is not more like California. And I just don't see this public transit catching on as much as Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, people like their cars and they like parking lots and they like the sort of safety, quote unquote, that a car feels like it gives you, even though what's funny is the car is in many ways an unsafe way to travel. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the light rail. When the light rail to Northgate opened up, I remember, and this is sort of embarrassing, I like cried just a little. I was on the train and I was like, this is kind of magical.
I am with you, Chase. I had a little emotional moment too. I love the trains.
Yeah.
Trish, I think we're going to really find out how important this is to Eastsiders when it's connected to Seattle, when it's connected to the airport. Because then that's when I think people on the east side maybe will use light rail to get to Seattle, to get to the airport cheaper. And I don't know, maybe that's a good time to just as a trial run to make it free. But oh wait, it's free already. No one pays. No one pays. And just for the record, I do pay, but when I go to Mount Baker Station, I don't see anyone buying a ticket. I don't see anyone reaching into their wallet to get their Orcus card out.
What is Sound Transit going to have to do to pitch this to people?
Yeah, it just needs to be like adopted by the neighborhoods around the stations. Because one, I don't think that a lot of people even know that the line is opening this weekend. I don't think that a lot of people know where the stations are. Like, I had to really look for maps that could tell me. Oh. And Google Maps is like slow to catch up. But I think if you look at like neighborhoods like the Ave and the U District, like that neighborhood has really adopted that light rail station. Yeah. And you see that the businesses around there are always doing festivals and encouraging people to take the light rail to the festival. So I think like in order for a light rail station to really work, the neighborhood around it needs to engage with it, and then people will start coming.
Yeah.
And you know what, Chase? I feel like when we reach a point where when every light rail station has like a bagel counter or a coffee counter, that's when you know it has caught on.
When I can get a hard roll with butter.
Yeah, because then now you have businesses that says, oh, there's a lot of foot traffic here. Let me put a latte stand or a bagel stand or a newsstand.
The 2 lines eventually going to go from Redmond through Bellevue onto Mercer Island through downtown Seattle, then up to Linwood, which, of course, is a long way out. And then there's the Ballard West Seattle light rail line in 2039. We're experienced light rail users here in Seattle. So let's give some hot tips to our friends on the east side. What do they need to know?
I mean, the hottest tip, which I don't think that they'll experience immediately on the east side because I don't think it'll be overcrowded, is just when it's very crowded, I don't think you should stand right in front of the exit doors. For some reason, people here don't really think to like move into the aisles. They're like, I can't stand in the aisles when it's busy. And so you'll just have 40 people by the exit door, which is a little dangerous.
Good one. I notice a lot of people like to leave their backpack on the second seat.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I think that's fine if there's a lot of seats.
Yeah.
You can send that little message, but put that thing on your lap.
It's a post-COVID thing, too, because after we started getting back on buses again, people were all really separated. And I'm like, we do kind of have to sit next to each other.
Yeah. All right. Boeing, stop me if you've heard this one before. Back in the news, they've released their earnings report for the first quarter of 2024. It's the first financial checkup we've gotten from them since the door plug blew out in mid-January. Seattle Times reporter Dominic Gates says the company lost $355 million in the first 3 months of the year. They also burned through $3.9 billion in cash. Included in that number is the $443 million payout to airlines who were forced to ground their planes. The feds are looking more closely at the company, and now we see the trickle down to the financial. But what are we really talking about here when the company's cash on hand is still $7.5 billion?
Trish, if you think about this, every time we hear a big company getting fined or penalized, I always feel like there's a zero missing at the end. You know, and then you hear about, oh, Boeing, God, $7.5 billion. You know, it's the penalty just never seems to be big enough.
And it doesn't seem to be changing the corporate behavior. Like when you look into the reporting, just the way the attitude of a lot of people in corporate or the more white collar positions just seems unconcerned. And maybe it's because they know that they have a lot of money that they can lose and they expect the bad headlines to go away. But I don't know, from a consumer perspective or just a person trying to get on planes, it seems kind of bleak. It doesn't seem like I have many options.
Well, and I think that is the almost the too big to fail problem, right? We have two companies responsible for the airliners in the world, Boeing and Airbus. So what does this mean to consumers when this, you know, safety thing doesn't seem to be resonating?
Exactly, Trish. It's too big to fail. I mean, when you ask something like, oh, okay, well, Boeing sucked. Let me look at other options. Well,
forget about it. I was on a 737 last week, twice.
Yeah, it's a two-team race. It's us and Airbus. And let's face it, Airbus is Europe. Boeing is United States. So if Boeing fails, it's AKA Team USA. And this is where Congress plays a role. Can you say subsidies, boys and girls? Can you say tax credit?
Dave Calhoun, Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun, wrote after the financials, there's a lot of work in front of us, but we remain fully confident in our future. Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah, and it just feels, I think we're all nihilistic about flying anyways, because I don't know, flying for the past 24 years, my whole lifetime almost, it just feels kind of bad. Like the increase in TSA, like general flight anxiety, and then you're like, oh, and the door might fly off. I don't know. It just seems like I just threw my hands up a long time ago.
There may be something to that, Chase, because the funny thing is I have always been an anxious flyer, but for some reason I had to fly a few times very recently. These last few flights, I've been like, okay.
Right?
I'm giving it over.
It's acceptance.
I'm either going to make it or I'm not going to make it. And the likelihood if something goes sideways on this is... And I am not lying when I say this. I'm not going to survive. And if I do, I'm flying on Alaska and they're going to pay me a bunch of money.
Yeah, or they might not. You know, some of these incidents where the door doesn't fly off, but something still right. sort of bad happens, they're
yes.
like, oh, well, we'll give you a flight voucher and like $100.
The bar is so low.
All right, moving on. It's Earth Week this week in Washington State, obliged by announcing a new electric vehicle rebate program specifically to get lower income people into EVs. Folks earning 300% of the federal poverty level or less are eligible for the program's incentives, which include a decent chunk of cash off a new or used EV. Just for an example, for a single person, the federal poverty level is $15,000, which is insane, ridiculous, if you ask me. That would mean that person has to earn $45,000 or less to qualify. For a family of three, that's $78,000. This kind of story makes me wonder about victory laps for politicians and who the heck is going to take advantage of this program. Because if I'm a single person making less than $45,000 a year, I have bigger problems than buying a new car.
You're definitely not living in Seattle.
You are definitely not living in Seattle. Yeah. Maybe out in, like, you know, Eastern Washington, yeah. This would work.
I mean, yeah, the limit is very low. I'm all for incentives, but it seems like there's a lot of complications in who would qualify and how you would qualify and what type of car you would qualify for. And I was going through a list and I just kind of crossed my... I don't have a car. I would love to buy an EV, but I just kind of crossed my eyes and was like, I don't... This is... Well, it's not going to qualify for me, so...
And I think, yeah, it's tone deaf, isn't it? In the terms, like, who really can afford this? Like, who's going to take advantage of this? Because I feel like if you're going to buy a Tesla, whatever, you're going to do it anyway. Isn't that based on this incentive?
Do either of you take advantage of even the rebate on the back of your, you know, groceries or whatever?
No. I would like to, but I don't.
I do, but I'm broke, and I can say it takes a lot of work to get that money. Like, this always just kind of gets my gut going.
Yeah. And Trish, the other thing is, when you buy a Tesla or something, I think you want your own home charger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of tough if you rent a place. That's mm-hmm. one. And two, if you look at the Seattle market, the houses are on the market now that's affordable, meaning $600,000 to $700,000, or townhouses that don't have their own garage that requires you to park in the streets. So how are you going to buy a Tesla and have a home charger?
Well, in the city, there's a lot more chargers than there are in North Seattle than there are in South Seattle, right? Seattle's constantly named as one of the best EV cities in the country. which, you know, you can see the Chargers, the Teslas are everywhere. I was just back on the East Coast, and honestly, there are very few fully electric vehicles there. And my sister has even made fun of me for being out here with all our electric vehicles. There's no chargers. There's no vehicles. I hope there's a plan to put in more EV chargers with that rebate, because if you're really targeting lower-income folks, you better put those chargers in lower-income neighborhoods. All right, one last thing before we go. Seattle's got a bit of an identity crisis on its hands, and it involves our friends down south in Los Angeles. Rain City has seen a lot less rain this year than L.A., according to the National Weather Service. It's our turn, Seattle. We are now invading California. L.A. has seen 15 inches of rain this year compared to a little under just 13 inches here in the city. I wonder if it's payback for all California transplants moving to Seattle.
I was just going to say that I kind of like the rain. I mean, I know that's a stupid comment, but I just mean to say I was walking to the station today and it was raining, and I was thinking how kind of nice it is to walk in the rain as a pedestrian. Yeah. It feels like romantic. It feels like I'm like dodging something and being adventurous. You know, where it sucks to be in the rain is in a car. It just makes it so much more stressful. And so I can understand why in California, where it's raining and you're stuck in traffic, that it would just be bleak.
Yeah. No fun. No fun.
Right. And I feel like I tell outsiders this and West Coast people this all the time. It's not a downpour here. It's just a drizzle. So when my relatives say, is it true Seattle lights don't carry umbrellas? What do women do with their hair? And my point is, it drizzles.
Look at mine today. Yeah, it stops. You're right.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back like all the big, I don't know, downpours I've been into. And I can't think of like any storms I've been stuck in Seattle, and I can recall two downpours in Orange County in Southern California, right? One was in Tuscan, the other was in Villa Park. It was just a downpour, a torrential downpour.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been chilly here for the past few days. Even with the perfect weekend weather, it seems like spring will not start around here. And of course, by June, we're going to be roasting because NOAA says it's going to be hotter than normal. So maybe we are not so different from California to begin with, and we should be kinder to our West Coast friends to the South.
Not really. But okay.
All right. Well, maybe we can sell them our umbrellas then.
The umbrellas we all have.
We're going to leave it there. Chase Burns is an editor at The Ticket. Tan Vinh is a food writer at The Seattle Times. Really appreciate you too.
Thanks for having us, Trish.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle Now, and extra thanks to the listeners who support this show. Today's episode was produced by Vaughn Jones. It was edited by Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. Our production team also includes Claire McGrain, Andy Hurst, and Paige Browning. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR network. I'm Patricia Murphy. See you soon.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.